From the land of Grant University in Urbana, Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 11th day of May, 2023. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Matt Bennett. He's at agmarket.net out of Windsor, Illinois. And as we close out our time together, we'll take a look at the weather forecast with Mike Tenura from T-Storm Weather at tstorm.net online. We'll catch up again today with the Farm Doc team. They're traveling west into Mato Grosso today. They were the northern part yesterday. We'll hear about a very large non-GMO soybean farm on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, July corn settled at 582 and a quarter, down 11 and three quarters today. September 7 and three quarters lower at 515. And December new crop, 513 and three quarters, down 7 cents. July soybeans up a penny and a half at $14 a nickel and a half. August 13.37 at a quarter, up a half cent. And new crop November down 2 3/4 at $12.48. The bean meal up $11.90 at $4.31.40. The bean oil at $51.15, down 90 cents. Wheat futures soft red July 14 cents lower, $6.27 at a quarter. The settlement price, the hard red July at $8.41 and a half. Down 13 and three quarters. Live cattle futures at $162.95, a nickel lower on the day. Feeder cattle at $2.26 and 7.5 cents, 92.5 cents higher. And lean hogs in the June contract at $83.87.5 per 100 pounds, down 30 cents. Crude oil, $70.81 a barrel, down $1.75 at this hour. Diesel fuel, 4.5 cents lower at $2.34.7. That's heating oil. And gasoline on the wholesale price, the RBOB, at $2.45.6, 3.8 cents lower. The Dow Jones Industrial Average down about 303 points at this hour, and the S&P 500 down 14 and three quarters of a point at 4,137. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Matt Bennett of AgMarket.net now joins us to take a look at what's happened in Chicago for the week. Hi, Matt. I understand you're traveling again this week. Where are you?
Yeah, so today I'm in South Central Nebraska at a big cattle feeder. These guys kind of manage a group of cattle feeders as well. They just want me to talk about the direction of the corn market mostly. So, and then from here, I'm actually going to go down to Manhattan. Bo graduates from K-State this weekend. So, I'm going to meet the rest of the family there tomorrow.
Oh, congratulations. I have two graduating with their masters from Illinois this weekend. So it's a great weekend.
That's awesome.
It should be a lot of fun. So I'm going to guess that the cattle producers are far happier about the recent moves in the marketplace than the corn and soybean producers are.
Yeah, that's a pretty good guess, Todd. I think most of them are, asking when I walk in the door, you're not bullish corn, are you? No, actually, I've been kind of defensive all winter. I guess I thought maybe we'd get a little bounce in here. Seasonally, you typically do. But at the same time, there's been a lot of things going against the market. You know, you had good rain over the weekend in places that need it. You had really good progress last week. 49% beat most people's average, the average trade guess. I mean, most people weren't 49%. I mean, that's a big jump on the week. And then you come in the next day and you get a Chinese cancellation. And so kind of that trifecta really has set the tone for the week. It's been kind of tough. I mean, yesterday was a nice breath of fresh air, but then you turn around and took it all back and then some today.
Does tomorrow's USDA report have you worried?
Oh, I don't know about worried, Todd. I think that essentially the expectations are for a bearish report. So most people think this is going to be bearish. When that's the case, it's got to be pretty daggum bearish to really elicit a really bearish response. Now, there's other things working against the market, of course. There's places that are receiving rainfall that in the West that haven't had a lot of rainfall the last couple of years. And so most people feel like we're heading into this El Nino a little quicker than what we thought. And if that's the case, then that trend line plus type yield is always in the cards. And if that's the case, USDA is still going to assume, I'm sure, 92 million acres tomorrow, then, the balance sheet for new crops is going to look a lot different than the balance sheet for old crop.
The farmers and ranchers that you're talking to today, I know they don't want you to be bullish. However, they're far enough to the west that they still must be concerned about the drought in that area and the availability of grain.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean, the problem, of course, is getting the grain to the places that need it whenever those areas are high usage areas. You know, you and I have talked about that a lot, and you heard me talk about that whenever I presented there in Champaign. But, you know, essentially the places that use the most corn were the places that had the worst crop. And so that's a bad combination, you know, whenever you're feeding, whenever you're growing and you have a few bushels to sell. You know, it's just a fantastic situation if you're getting a $2 of a basis or something like that. But as a cattle feeder, that certainly isn't what you want to see. So there's definitely going to be some question marks as to what the availability is going to be of corn throughout the rest of this marketing year, first of all, and then, you know, going on into this next one. So, of course, the person in that situation is hoping that the upper Midwest and northern plains get everything planted. That's kind of a question mark right now. Some of the growers I've got in that part of the world, you know, actually are looking at, you know, delayed planting because too much rain. So, you know, there's a lot of question marks still, but by all means, the trade seems very unconcerned about having enough corn, just based upon the way that we're trading.
Now, did you drive out and did you take 80 or did you go across the top of Missouri?
Oh, shoot, God. It's been a planes, trains, and automobiles type trip for me. Actually, drove over to St. Louis, flew to Denver, had to drive back in. What I didn't realize is very few car rental companies will give you a one-way rental anymore. And it's really hard to get a hold of one. And I needed to pick one up. And there's no car rental outfit in Nebraska that would allow me to return it in Manhattan, Kansas. Maybe they just don't like Kansas State. I don't know. But, you know, for whatever reason, I couldn't get one. So I had to get into Denver. It was either that or drive from home. And, it really wasn't going to work with everyone else coming out here a day or two later.
So you had to drive through some of the droughtiest areas in the United States
for sure,
row
yeah.
crops then. What did it look like?
You know, the interesting thing is that from Denver to I-80, so up into the northeastern corner of Colorado, it was absolutely soaked. They've had a ton of rain over the last 24, 48 hours, whereas then I got into Nebraska, and of course, some of these areas, they had a little bit of rain here this week, but it's still dry. I mean, really dry. So they said that the road that they're on is, you know, kind of a gravel, rock, dirt road type situation. And they said, you know, it's just a dust bowl before a couple of days ago they had maybe 3 or 4 times of rain. So, you know, a little bit of a dust settling type rain, but they certainly need a lot more rain.
Not enough to salvage the crop. Are they in that point where they're thinking they'll need to plow it under?
You know, it just depends. Some of these guys haven't even planted yet because of moisture. So it's definitely a mixed bag, but by all means, it's a concerning one. So there's no question that some of these guys are worried about what kind of crop they'll be able to grow to begin with.
I was thinking of wheat as opposed to corn and soybeans, but the answer is fine.
Right, yeah. I mean, there's a fair amount of wheat, right? But I would say you get a little farther south and you're going to run into a little bit more of it. But, you know, the wheat that I've seen didn't look very good at all. So I didn't see a lot of fields, though.
And then on that note about farmers not having their crop in the ground, they have a May 25 prevent plant date. Have you asked them about that yet?
Not yet, but it's definitely something we're going to talk about. So I do know that some of my growers farther to the north have mentioned that there might be a little more prevent plant, especially with the corn market taking the shine off of it like it has here lately, that it's not as exciting to step in, you know, and push at 513 is what it was at, you know, 650. And so, you know, I do think that could have an impact on prevent plans. Is it going to be a large one? I don't know. But if it's too wet to have ideal conditions, I don't think at this price level with input still relatively expensive. I know they've come down a bunch, but I'm just not so sure that guys are going to be super eager.
Hey, thanks much, and have fun at K-State with Bo's graduation.
Absolutely. Same to you this weekend, Todd.
Indeed. Thanks much. That's Matt Bennett. He is with AgMarket.net. Let's catch up on the 10th day of activities with the Farm Dog team as they made their way across Brazil. Yesterday, they were in the northern part of Mato Grosso on a farm that produces non-GMO soybeans. Gary Schnittke has the details.
Yeah, we're at the Gianzi farm, and they produce all of their soybeans non-GMO and have markets for those. And we saw some budgets from those. And so raising non-GMO soybeans here in Brazil, Mato Grosso.
On how many acres or hectares?
So they have 20,000 hectares, and it is totally, completely GMO-free or non-GMO. They do that with soybeans. Their corn is GMO, so they don't sell their corn as non-GMO, but they do sell their soybeans GMO. They have logistic issues getting that from their farms, and they have their own on-farm storages, large elevators, actually. And they move that from their elevators through by trucks to the port and overseas.
Do they have difficulty in sourcing non-GMO seed?
Yes and no. There's a couple, two companies here in Brazil that produce non-GMO seed. So they're getting their seed sources from not the majors, but two companies with that are specifically in Brazil.
When you looked at their budgets, and I assume you got to look at some of those numbers, the non-GMO gave them a more profitable farm or not?
Yes, that's what the, and actually that's what they're trying to do. They have lower yields with their non-GMO soybeans and higher costs. They have to use more because they don't have the technology in the seeds. They have to do more sprays. So they have both lower yields and higher cost, and you have to make up for the difference, obviously, in a premium on the bushel.
And are they selling directly to the end user?
Yeah, they are selling to directly the end user, and because of their size, they can obviously make deals directly with the end producers, and then they move it out that way.
Which ports do they go to? Do they go to the south or to the north?
They go to the northern ports. So we're in northern Mato Grosso, and they head north.
And how much does it cost to move the soybeans? Do you know?
We didn't get that number, but it's a lot. We were on the highway 136 here. That's supposed to be, or a number of people have told us that it handles 50% of the soybeans in Brazil, and it's a long highway, and some of it goes south and some of it goes north, but it's a two-lane road, and it's amazing the truck traffic even now that we're on it. We were on that road for a couple hours. There was a wreck on it that shut down the roads, and our driver knew a way to get around it through the back road, so otherwise we would have been there for 3-4 hours. So wrecks are pretty common on that road, and it's just a two-lane highway.
Logistical issues, you believe, are really the difficulty still that Brazilian farmers face and affects their competitiveness mostly?
Yeah, so Brazil, the logistics issues will add quite a lot to the cost. We went to a ethanol plant, and they noted that Mato Grosso is the lowest price corn source in the world, and part of that's just logistics, and part all of that is actually logistics. So you know, the two lane highways, not having trains, and not developing the barge system has caused their farm gate prices to be low. Having said that, they also have low land costs. So if they got higher prices here, it would just become capitalized in the land like it does in the United States. That is actually probably going to become more and more happen here, because particularly in the developed areas of Mato Grosso, there isn't a lot of land. And in fact, a couple of the farmers have mentioned that you know, when you look at the ROA on buying land or even renting land, it's getting much tighter here in Mato Grosso. And so that's why they look at frontier areas in other countries.
Thank you, Gary. Gary Schnicki, of course, is traveling with Joanna Colucci, another part of the Farm Doc team from here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois across Brazil. She planned this two-week adventure, Joanna. It has been really fantastic to watch and participate from this end as you've all made your way across Brazil and into Mato Grosso now. Thank you for doing that. Tell me about the size of farms in general in Brazil and how that compares to the United States and what you were hoping the Farm Doc team might learn.
Hi, Todd. Thank you so much for putting this material together. So actually, we are in the Mato Grosso, the largest grain producer in Brazil. So the size of the farmers here, the average is higher than the rest of Brazil. So in the region that we are today, for example, Sapezal, Tangará da Serra, this region, the average, the size is around 8,000 hectares per farm. Of course, there are some farmers that they plant more than 100 hectares, but on average is 8,000 hectares per farm. The region that we were yesterday, for example, Sapezal, Sinop, Lucas do Rio Verde, the average of the farmers there is around 3,000 hectares per farm. So, but of course, we are talking about one region of the Brazil that the size of the farmers is much higher than in the south of Brazil. That's most similar than the Midwest in the US, for example.
And you've moved into northern Brazil or northern Mato Grosso now. And what will you see today?
Actually, we are in the west of Mato Grosso. Today, we'll visit the Schaefer farm. This guy, he plants around 200,000 hectares of soybeans, corn, and cotton. He is investing recently in regenerative agriculture with some actions regarding biological and other activities to reduce the amount of the pesticides, the fertilizers that they use on the farm. And in the end of the day, today we are going to Cuiabá. That will be our last stop in Mato Grosso. Cuiabá is the capital of Mato Grosso. There, we'll have a meeting with APROSOJA. APROSOJA is an association of producers in Mato Grosso, and as well with some hubs of innovation that are investing in digital technologies and technology adoption in general among soybean farmers. Actually, grain farmers, soybeans, corn, and other cultures.
You say you're in the western part of Mato Grosso. Yesterday, I know you had entered the Amazon biome. As you go west, do you get deeper into that biome?
Actually, no. Most of part of Mato Grosso is in Cerrado. It's a Brazilian savanna. Just the north part of the north of Mato Grosso, it's Amazon biome. Actually, the region that we were yesterday, Sinop, is in a transition area between Cerrado and Amazon. So when farmers need to open new areas, for example, they need to request a study to analyze if the region is more characterized with Amazon or Cerrado. Actually, they are in a transition area. But of course, even more northern, you go like in direction of Pará, we are into Amazon forest.
Thank you, and I appreciate you taking the time with us, and I look forward to the webinar that you and Gary and Nick Paulson will be putting on the 18th, next Thursday, and hope people will get themselves signed up for it.
Thank you so much, Todd. Have a good one.
You too, Joanna. Joanna Calusi is in Brazil this week with the Farm Dog team, including Nick Paulson and Gary Schnittke. All three of them, by the way, will be together on Thursday of next week at 11 a.m. for a Farm Doc webinar. You can sign up for that at farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Look under webinars and get yourself signed up. Or you can go to willag.org and look in the schedule, and you'll see it there on Thursday of next week, highlighted in red. Open that up, just click on it, and you'll find the link for registration there as well. Let's check the weather forecast now with Mike Tenera. He's at T-Storm Weather, tstorm.net online. Hi, Mike. Thanks for being with us.
Hey, thanks for having me here, Todd.
Let's begin with a forecast for the growing regions of the United States. What does it look like over the next, 3 to 4 days?
Well, it's going to be a little stormy. We're not going to see heavy rain in all locations, but most areas will receive at least a little bit of rain. The main uncertainty here is who's going to see the most and who's going to see the least. The reason it's a little bit of a complex forecast is because we have a very large upper-level system that's located near Colorado today. That system is only going to inch to the northeast through Sunday. So over a four-day period, it's only going to move from Colorado to Minnesota. Now, you could basically walk that far if you really wanted to, if you had four full days to do it. So it gives you an idea of just how slowly this system is moving. What's going to happen then is heavy rain will fall to the north and west of it. Because of that, we think that spring wheat will see some pretty good rains over the next 4 days. That'll include most of the Dakotas as well as eastern Montana. As you start to head further north and get into northern Minnesota, where there is a concentration of corn, soybeans, and wheat, that area will be on the edge of this system. So they might miss out, which would be a good thing because it's been pretty wet there, not just from the little bit of rain that we've seen over the last week or two in that region, but from all that snow that melted from March through April. We're still dealing with wet conditions because of that. Now, the system will eventually spin itself out and be a thing of the past by the time we get into Monday. But until then, elsewhere, just some scattered showers and storms here and there. That'll include most of Illinois. We're not looking for any gully washers or anything like that, but maybe a quarter of an inch on the low side to 3/4 of an inch on the high side. And that'll take us through early next week. But the bigger story, Todd, I think, should be that once the system gets out of here, no matter where it rains or doesn't rain or however it all pans out, it will turn a lot drier. There's essentially very little rain on the horizon once we get to Monday and then stretching on out about 7 to 10 days. Temperatures will also be pleasant. We won't see hot weather with highs in the 80s and 90s, but it also won't be cool with 60s and 70s. Instead, most areas will be right around 75 degrees with not a lot of rain, and we should see some decent sunshine too. So the forecast is looking pretty good for planting next week. We just need to get there first.
Is there anything on the horizon past that that has you worried or feeling good about the growing season?
We don't want to out-forecast the weather. So once you're more than 2 weeks out in May with an upper-level system that's sitting here right now, we just don't have a very strong opinion of what's to come after that. So when we say that, we're basically telling you that we don't think there's any reason to think the dry pattern is going to somehow last through June, but we also don't see a real good reason to start forecasting heavy rain either.
Hey, thank you much.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Todd.
That's Mike Tenura. He is with T-Storm Weather at tstorm.net online. You can find us at willag.org online, and there you'll be able to get yourself signed up for next week's Farm Doc in Brazil webinar. Now look in the schedule. If you scroll down, you'll find that, and you may need to scroll till next Thursday. At 11 a.m., you'll see in red that there's a webinar there. You can click that link and open up and copy the link to get yourself registered. It's free for the Farm Doc in Brazil webinar with Nick Paulson, Gary Schnicki, and Joanna Colusi, or you can simply go to farmdocdaily.illinois.edu and look under webinars and register there. It's all about the service that comes to you from Illinois Public Media and University of Illinois Extension.